Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, you can visit teacherluke.wordpress.com. Hello there, and welcome to Luke's English Podcast. This episode that you are now listening to is part two of a conversation I had with a friend of mine from Australia called Daniel Burt. And you know what I mean? Daniel Burt's from Australia, so he kind of speaks a bit like this. And that's a sort of vague approximation of his Australian accent. You know what I mean, mate? Yeah, stick another prawn on the barbie. To be honest, people in Australia don't say, stick another prawn on the barbie. It's a bit of a cliche or a stereotype. You'll hear Daniel and I discussing some of these things in this episode. In fact, some of the things that we are going to talk about in this part are Daniel's move to London, some cliches about Australian people, typical Australian English phrases, for example, g'day mate, how you going, you know, that kind of thing. We talk a bit about Australian pronunciation or the Australian accent. We go a little bit deeper into the subject and talk about the Australian national character and national identity. We talk a bit about Australian politics and the future of Australia and Australia's image of itself. We talk a bit about Australia's love of sport and competition. And finally, we get to the real gold, which is Daniel telling us a few things about meeting Benedict Cumberbatch, who plays Sherlock Holmes, Martin Freeman, who plays The Hobbit, and Dr. Watson, and also Matt Smith and David Tennant, both of whom have played Doctor Who. So we'll be able to hear Daniel tell us a few things about those experiences. All right, so the conversation is going to start now. Here it is. Thanks for listening. Speak to you again soon. Bye. You were saying that you're going to be moving away from Paris very soon.
Yes, very soon. I'm off to London. I must be the only Australian who'd been to England but not London.
Well, because Australians have got a kind of reputation for travelling abroad a lot, especially going to England.
Infesting, I think, is the word.
Infesting. What, like a plague?
Like a rat plague, yeah.
Okay. And particularly London, it seems that there's a massive Australian community, fairly sort of... they stay there. They don't stay there permanently. Some of them do, but a lot of them go for a year or two, and then they come back to Australia. But yeah, there is that we'll come to stereotypes and things in a minute.
Sure.
Because from an English point of view or Londoner's point of view, one of the stereotypes of an Australian person is someone who's just there for a year. They work in a bar, you know, and they live in a shared house and they drink in the walkabout pub.
Gross.
You know, that's kind of one of the sort of stereotypes.
Do you have a Australian bar near you? You've got a cafe or
here
not
in Paris.
Far.
Yeah, we've got one just a few streets away. I can't remember. Is it a cafe?
Yeah, cafe Oz. Now I don't know why an Australian would travel all that way to drink in an Australian pub. I have no idea.
I guess they feel like that's where they know what the rules are.
Okay.
Maybe after their tourism, where it's all French and they, you know, and all that, they can go somewhere where it's like Cheers. Sometimes you want to go.
But I don't know if the clientele is mainly Australian. Maybe it's not. But certainly Paris is intimidating enough for that to be a valid reason to go. England is not in London is not intimidating to an Australian.
No, it shouldn't be. No.
So London has held no real allure for me in an exotic sense because it always felt Australians call England the mother country. So, you know, we have things in Australia named after all over the place. It's named after stuff in London and England. So it's not that different. So it's more a place to work.
So you're not looking forward to going there, are you?
No, I think I really like it. I think I absolutely... Yeah. It feels like it's happening.
Oh, it's
But it's that's if it's not. I mean, I'm sure it is, but I'm more than happy to be seduced by the romance of the place. And at the moment, I am in. I love it. Like I love. Because that's the thing, I don't speak French, so there's always...
Oh, you love it in Paris? You love Paris?
No, I love Paris, but I love... Every time I fly to London or catch the train for work, if I've got to interview somebody or visit a TV set or something, I maybe get a biased view of the place because I get put up at nice hotels and stuff. But it really does feel like, culturally, if not the centre, a centre of the universe.
Yeah, really. Well, I suppose if... Okay, so you've been to London then. You have.
Yes.
But
when I initially arrived, I'd been to Derby.
When you initially arrived in England...
Yeah.
When you initially arrived here in Paris, you hadn't been to England or you hadn't been to London. You'd been to Derby.
Yeah, Derby.
What? Derby is such a sort of odd choice of a place to go. Derby, if you don't know, listeners, is it's like a town in the Midlands. It's not that... I don't want to offend the people of Derby. It's a lovely place. But if you come from the other side of the world and you go to England, Derby isn't necessarily the place that you would choose to visit first. I mean, you'd go to Edinburgh, you'd go to London, you go to Dublin or something like that, but Derby, all right.
It's weird also as an Australian, because Australia is obviously massive. Everybody knows that. So to travel to different parts of England and hear different accents, when in Australia, if we travelled that distance, you wouldn't have even left one city.
Oh, yeah. Okay, we're talking about accents, so... Australia being so big, you can travel hundreds of miles and the accent is basically the same.
I think Australians are notorious for having a pretty homogenised accent.
Okay. Whereas in England, the accents change like every few miles, it feels. It can be.
Yeah. You know. If we do have differences of accent, it's largely... And I don't think I'm shooting my mouth off anthropologically. I think it is just a class... it's a class thing. So there's class distinctions... but not regional distinctions.
Okay.
So a rich person in Perth will sound pretty similar to a hoity-toity rich person in Melbourne.
Okay. How does a rich person from Australia sound?
Oh, no. I knew as soon as I said that I'd have to give an impression. Well, it's interesting. It's more refined. I mean, if you look at old Vox Pops...
Sort of interviews with people in the street.
Latin for... Short for Latin, Vox Populi, I think it was called.
Uh-huh.
So if you look at Vox Pops from 30 years ago in Australia, our accents were so much different.
Yes, really.
It's unbelievable to hear the difference. It's called either Strine.
Strine?
Yeah.
Well, the old-fashioned accent?
Yeah, yeah.
Strine?
So S-T-R... I-N-E or S-T-R-A-Y-A-N.
And that means Australian.
Yeah.
Strain. Okay. All right. This is interesting. So we can learn how to speak like an Australian person.
Mm.
So if you're Australian, you don't say Australian. You say Strain.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, g'day, mate. Are you Strain?
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. You've obviously done this before.
I've watched Neighbours.
Oh, right.
For many years. But, yeah, I like to try and copy accents.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's another thing, and it may be a cliche about the Australian accent, and that's that there's a lot of upward intonation.
Mm.
So if you're strain, everything seems to go up at the end.
Yeah, that's true. Weird thing also is the ER words end in A-H.
So, ER words meaning like teacher, computer, footballer.
Yeah, footballer, carpenter.
Teacher,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, are you a teacher?
Yeah, exactly. it's weird because when I meet an Australian overseas, like for instance, in New York, someone said to me, how are you?
Yeah.
And sometimes I don't know whether the Australianness in me comes out extra, or if it would have just been there, whoever asked me.
Oh, so, right. You mean when you're in a foreign country, when you're in a place like Australia where you feel different, sometimes you become even more Australian just because you're aware of the difference.
Yes,
yeah, that's I know exactly how you feel, and the same in English.
Someone asked me how I was. I said tickety boo.
Yeah, I'm tickety boo, mate.
I mean, what?
Tickety boo. And tickety boo is like saying fine. Yeah. But it's just something that, you wouldn't normally say. It's like a
chimney sweep. Yeah, I don't know. What the hell?
Yeah. I'm tickety boo, mate. Yeah, I find that when I'm in France here, when I meet American people, when I lived in Japan, I sort of became a lot more English than I normally am. So I'd be sort of saying, you know, jolly good and things like that. Like,
right.
Why am I saying that?
But no, my thing is, maybe you would be saying that anyway, but you're just not noticing it.
Yeah. It's only because you're out of your element that it's more obvious.
And there's an Australian cafe that I go to, not Cafe Oz, but a proper, they do Australian style coffee.
Mm.
And I go, and they are Australian and lovely girls. And they say bonjour, and I'll say g'day.
Yeah.
Like an idiot.
Bonjour. G'day.
G'day, mate. So,
yeah, can I get a coffee? No, I don't.
It's weird because most Australians can do an Australian accent. Most Australians can do the accent that people think is Australian.
Okay.
Like, if you want me to be more Australian, I can
do it. If you want me to be more Australian,
it's like, no, skin off my nose. I can do it easy.
So this is this sort of slightly broader cliche Australian
accent.
That's right. Okay.
Which we actually, I believe, have in us. And even though the more sophisticated and urban and worldly Australians get, the more kind of entrenched we get in this mythological larrikin. Larrikin might even be an Australian.
Larrikin?
Mm.
What? I'm confused. What are you talking
larrikin
about?
Larrikin is a knockabout Aussie prankster.
Like a sort of naughty Australian guy who plays tricks on people?
Yeah, yeah. So,
what, is he like a modern person or is
No, it... no, he's been around forever.
Oh, it's like a mythological...
No, not forever. He's been around since white settlement.
Okay.
He's
a sort of cheeky Australian guy who plays tricks and makes jokes on people.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes. So now we had a prime minister.
Yes.
Kevin Rudd was his name.
Yeah.
He's born in Queensland.
Yeah.
Which is very ochre.
Ochre.
Australian.
Like really true blue Australian.
Yeah. Full yobbo, mate.
Okay.
Yeah. Yobbo ochre Australian. Like.
And you got Bogan.
Yeah.
As well.
Bogan. So he's from Queensland. Very. All of those things that we just said.
Very sort of really, let's just say it like this, just really Australian, like right at the source.
Yeah.
Right at the source of what is deeply Australian.
Yeah.
So he's, yeah, g'day, mate. You know, g'day, mate. I mean, that's the only thing I can say.
Yeah, yeah,
maybe
yeah. How's bloody going? You know, people will come up to me in Paris and say, oh, throw another shrimp on the barbie, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, throw another shrimp on the barbie.
Because
the cliche is that Australians are outside in the back garden, they've got lots of space and it's sunny and they're drinking beer. Yeah, and people are kind of laid back, maybe a bit loud.
Yeah.
And they're having a barbecue and they're eating shrimp, so it's like, yeah, g'day, mate. Throw another shrimp on the barbie.
Yeah.
Which I don't want to send that cliche further out into the world. I don't want to perpetuate.
No, that's the point. That's
don't
exactly
want to
right.
It,
because the cliche, and every Australian knows this, is fundamentally wrong. We do not call them shrimps. We do not put prawns on barbecues.
Yeah.
It is a figment of, I think, an advertisement campaign in the 80s.
Yeah, okay.
So anyway, he's from Queensland, but he is a policy wonk.
What's a policy wonk?
A policy wonk is he's a politician who is very smart, knows legislation, enjoys making policy. Politicians make policy, and that's policy, politicians, politics.
Yeah, they make policy, they make laws.
They make laws.
So he's when you say he's a policy wonk, he's just someone who wrote lots of laws.
Oh, he just loves the fine print. He's a geek. A geek. Sorry, yeah. Wonk geek. He's
okay.
A geek.
Okay.
He's he speaks Mandarin. He was very, very, you know, glasses, nerd.
Yeah.
But he's from this Queensland. So he would do these weird things that Australians found quite funny because he would say things like, oh, you know, put it. And he spoke in more of a clipped kind of...
Slightly more posh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Australian
yeah.
accent.
And so he would say, you know, like, fair shake of the sauce bottle there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just sounded very phony, like a politician trying to be rough.
So okay, so the issue with what was his name again?
Kevin Rudd.
Kevin Rudd that you're explaining is that he spoke with a posh kind of Australian accent, but he would try to sound like a normal guy, like a normal guy from Queensland, by using these typical phrases that are sort of colloquialisms, but he would do it in his slightly posh accent. And that's just horrible because it's innately going against his genuine identity.
But he's a very complex guy.
Yeah.
He's, you know, maybe that is him. Like, maybe he's a weird hybrid that we've never seen before.
We had the same thing with Tony Blair, who, of course, was the Prime Minister in Britain for many years, 97 till 2006 or something.
Yep.
Tony Blair, Prime Minister, but he would change the way he spoke depending on who he was with and the situation he was in. So he was able to be very sort of formal sounding in certain situations. And then there would be some PR moment where he was on the news, like buying an ice cream from an ice cream man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, mate, I'll take that one. And he's kind of dropping his T's and things.
Oh, okay, it's a bit icky.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, what's he doing?
You can see
so fake.
Barack Obama does this a little bit, depending on where he is. But that's politicians; they're allowed to. But it's weird for Australians. There are some Australian phrases that I think I don't know if Australians say them authentically or if we say them ironically.
What are the five most sort of widely known Australian phrases? Let's say, I mean, I don't want my listeners to keep saying these things, and you should be aware that if you meet an Australian, these aren't necessarily the first things you should say, but you should be aware of the five, like, phrases. So we've got g'day, mate.
Oh, yeah, g'day,
which
mate.
Which is basically hello, mate.
Yep.
And we've got...
Good day, mate.
Yeah, good day.
Yeah, sure.
Good day.
The Australianisms mostly are just abbreviations.
Okay. G'day. And then we've got throw another prawn on the barbie,
even though
people don't actually eat shrimps on barbecues.
Mm-hmm.
What else have we got? We've got no worries.
Yeah, no worries, mate. Well, there's, you know, there's no, I would say no, and I would say this ironically.
Yes.
Either no wuckers or no wuck and furries.
Okay. Okay. No wuck and furries.
Mm-hmm.
Is a like saying no fucking worries, but you've changed the letters around. So
yes.
Not no fucking worries, but no whacking furries.
That's right.
And that's just like a fun...
I believe it's the correct term is a spoonerism.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, that's right. Made famous by some guy called Spooner.
That's right.
Famous for doing it.
Mm.
Okay. All right. So we've got g'day. Stick another prawn on the barbie. No worries, no whacking furries.
Sure, yeah.
Another one?
Well, there are so... Like, I'm not kidding. There are books filled with them. There are thousands.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the moment we've got a Prime Minister who enjoys surfing.
Okay.
And he goes running along the beach.
Yeah.
Now, some people wear board shorts.
Okay, these are shorts that you wear at the beach when you go surfing.
Mm.
Long shorts.
Long shorts. We Australians would call them togs.
Okay.
But if you wear this particular style of togs,
yeah,
they're called budgie smugglers.
Budgie smugglers.
So it's just basically a pair of wetsuit style underpants.
Why are they called budgie smugglers? By the way, a budgie is like a pet bird.
Mm.
Just like a colourful bird that sings, you keep it in your house, a budgie.
Yeah.
To smuggle a budgie would be, for some reason, if you wanted to, let's say, take a budgie across an international border.
Yeah.
And you wanted to, you wanted to hide it because you didn't want to have to pay the tax. There's probably some import tax for budgies.
Yeah.
So you would smuggle the budgie in.
Mm.
And how would you do it? Well, you'd need to put it in a bag, or maybe you would stuff it under your underpants.
Yeah. And it looks like you're smuggling budgies.
Okay. So the why a budgie of all things?
I don't know. But there is not an Australian who would not, if I said budgie smuggler, they would know exactly what I was talking about, and they would probably, if you were playing Family Feud, say Prime Minister.
Okay, right, so hold on. Let me piece this together. So budgie smugglers, because the shorts are very tight.
Yeah.
And so it looks like you've got a dead bird under them.
Yeah,
it may be dead.
It's hugging your appendage in such a way that it's protruding. Yeah, there's lumps.
Okay. So, actually, the lumps caused by your private parts are bulging out.
Yeah.
And it could appear that you're attempting to smuggle a pet bird.
Yeah.
We don't know why, but that's just the
phrase. So, for instance, or if you're at a pub in Australia and you want a cigarette, you might say, I'm not sure if anyone else says this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they'll say, maybe you guys say it.
Can I bum a fag off
you? Yeah, so bumming.
To bum a fag.
Mm.
Yeah, I've been through this on the podcast already, actually.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. It's interesting that you bring it up. And it's interesting the Australians say it too.
My dad says to me in emails when he's saying goodbye, he'll say uru.
Uru?
Yeah.
What's that?
H-O-O-R-O-O.
H-O-O-R-O. Uru or huru?
Yeah, uru.
Uru.
Goodbye.
Uru means goodbye.
Uru means goodbye.
How does uru mean goodbye?
You know what? I could find the etymology, perhaps, but it's not immediately apparent.
Do you think that most people don't know?
I think that most people don't know.
But just basically, uru?
Everyone would know.
And is there a particular way that I should say it?
Say it again.
Uru.
It's probably a bit forced, but yeah. Uru.
Uru.
Yeah.
It's like ta-da.
Yeah.
Ta-da, mate.
Mm.
Ta-da. Uru. Okay. You got others?
Well, I don't know if I've got others. I mean, it's hard to know what's uniquely Australian.
Yes. Well, okay. How about this? Is Australia more similar to the United States, or is it more similar to the UK, or is it unique?
I think we're an amazing... I used to work for a show called... It was a comedy quiz show. Called The Einstein Factor.
Okay.
And it was... I met the most intelligent people in Australia on this show. The question writer was a genius. He mentioned how Australians don't give ourselves enough credit.
You mean you're a bit self-critical?
We're self-critical in terms of our intelligence.
Okay.
I know. It's killing me.
Daniel is struggling with a pad here. You might hear it. You might be able to hear it.
I cannot believe how much
he's fiddling so much that
it's stabbing me, and now I'm trying to tear it off.
He's destroyed his pad.
Yeah.
Just out of fiddling.
But if that's come up on the microphone, that's just unforgivable.
Don't worry. It's just the way it's real world.
It's real.
Authentic communication.
Sure. So he would say that. Australians beat ourselves up for not... But because we're at the bottom of the world, we look out.
Okay.
And we actually know more about the world than maybe the world knows about the world. Mm. Or the world knows about us, certainly.
Mm. Mm.
So we consume British media as voraciously as American media.
Okay. So you're getting lots of British shows and American shows. So, I mean...
So, but people, as an Australian comedian, there's always, you hear talk about America looking towards Britain and sharing, you know, but Australia, we don't have this debate. We don't have it because we see ours as we've just borrowed from both.
Okay.
We get all the BBC stuff, we get all the American stuff, and we've, you know, Friends was as big as Fawlty Towers. Like, there is no... We've just consumed all of it.
Yeah.
So, there's no... I don't think there's necessarily a bias, a cultural bias towards either country.
Okay. Which, what's the future of Australia, do you think? Because we're, you know, in America, they worry about their future, the economy and stuff, and the resources. Britain, similar story. Britain, you know, we don't know what our industry is anymore. And, you know, what's our situation with Europe? And we've got, you know, a financial crisis. We've got no land and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
What about Australia? What's
well,
the story?
Well, I'm a bit bored of hearing American talking heads talk about American problems.
Yeah.
So say with gun control or healthcare or education, as far as I'm concerned, Australia has nailed them.
When you say nailed them, you've got them right.
Got them right. If they're not right, they're pretty close, or they're sure as hell better than what the states have got going
on. Let's have a little look at gun control as an example. Yeah. So in the states, they have, let's say, a gun control problem. They do, because everyone's talking about it. And in Australia, I mean... Okay, in America they have mass shootings and other things. And now in Australia, you dealt with the gun situation in a decisive way, didn't you?
Yeah, in 1996, there was a massacre, and the Prime Minister at the time, the Parliament of the time, really legislated for gun control. There was a gun buyback scheme.
Government bought guns from gun owners.
Yeah.
And then... like, used the materials for something else.
Took the guns off the street, and there has not been a shooting since.
Yeah.
There's a really interesting... And it did go viral, and I'm very disappointed that it took an American... It took a British guy on an American program to highlight an Australian achievement.
You're talking about John Oliver on the Daily Show. Yeah.
I find that so disappointing.
Yeah.
But it's an example, and this is to answer your question about Australia's future. We probably don't pat ourselves on the back for what we get right.
You don't pat yourself on the back. Well done, Australia.
Yeah.
Like, you don't congratulate yourself.
Yeah. And we're a very, in its current, the way Australia looks at the moment, we're a very young country. So England might... get a bit set in its ways.
You mean a bit sort of stuck in its traditions?
Yeah. Yeah. You've got thousands of years of of tradition, and we don't have that. And obviously I'm not talking about the Indigenous population. So we actually have it within ourselves to be the best country on paper and just... categorically excellent. We can choose a future. We can do whatever we want. We're rich, unbelievably.
Where's the money coming from?
I have economist friends who would prefer this answer. If you ask the layman, they would say we had a resources boom.
The layman meaning just someone who doesn't have expert knowledge. Resources. So you've got lots of land. You've got have you got oil?
We don't have oil. We've got coal.
You got coal, okay.
So there was a critic, David Horn, I think was his name, who in the 60s, I think, he wrote an essay about Australia. One of them, one of the lines in it was he called it as the lucky country. I'm not sure if the rest of the world knows Australia is the lucky country.
No, I had no idea. No.
So we call ourselves a lucky country. Now he meant it as an insult.
How?
Like resources, dumb luck.
Oh, meaning that you haven't actually achieved it, you just found it.
Yeah, great. Good on us. Like lucky for us. We basically inherited a democracy. We didn't have to fight for it. So that's what he meant by the lucky country.
Okay.
But a lot of Australians think they choose the word lucky as they spin it as being like
positive.
We've made our own luck.
Yeah.
Whereas the source of that phrase means we didn't.
Okay.
And so the only thing I'm worried about Australia is, do we are we optimistic? Because if an Australian was asked, what do we think about POMs?
POMs meaning British people.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you know what we would say?
The classic thing that Australians say about the Brits is that we complain a lot.
Yeah.
You call us whinging poms.
Whinging poms.
Whinging means complaining.
Yeah.
So what do we whinge about?
The weather or whatever.
Yeah. That we complain a lot and we talk about our problems, but we don't actually do anything to fix them. Is that it?
So there's, and that's what I'm worried about for Australia.
That you're going to be and you're not going to be dynamic enough.
That I think the idea of a whinging pom, like if I tune into the media in Australia, yeah. I just hear whinging about stuff that doesn't matter.
You mean lots of debate over issues,
yeah.
rather than decisive decision, like clear decision making.
Mm.
And dynamic kind of action-oriented.
Like, instead of looking to the rest of the world to do something first,
yeah.
and prove it right, and then we go, oh, okay, now we'll do it.
Yeah.
It's a matter of having the self-confidence to go ahead and do it first and do it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah,
And there are... Australian history is filled with examples of that, of us leading the world in many areas.
Really?
And I hope... that we continue to do that.
Just one of those would be, for example, gun control.
Yes.
The way you dealt with the gun.
Oh, yeah. The seatbelt advertisements, we pioneered that. England was debating about plain cigarette packaging.
Cigarettes that have no colours or anything on them as a way of trying to reduce the number of purchases.
And they're all saying, oh, we'll see how it goes in Australia. And I'm very proud of the fact, not that I'm not entitled to be proud because I had nothing to do with it, but... No. I like that we don't have to look to see what the rest of the world is doing, because the one thing about being at the bottom of the world, sometimes you might not recognise that a large chunk of the rest of the world is a basket case.
You mean being in the bottom of the world, you might not realise that some other parts of the world are crazy?
Yeah, or not doing as well as you.
Oh, okay. So you mean the Australians think that because they're down under... They can't lead the way.
Mm.
They think we're down at the bottom, so we're not the leaders.
Yeah.
But you're saying that it doesn't matter that you're down there. You can still.
That's right.
Be at the front of things.
Because we don't have this problem with sport.
Ah, God. Yeah. Australia is incredibly competitive and sporting. Mm. I mean, like we were talking about cricket earlier. Cricket being, you know, a sport that's incredibly big in Australia and in England, and we have like a competition every 2 years between Australia and England, the Ashes, and it's like really brutally competitive. I find Australians to be really competitive when it comes to sport.
Mm. And one, that's why wandering around Paris and seeing, say, the Pantheon.
Yeah, it's like an old, very old, beautiful-looking building. Used to be a kind of refuge.
Well, it was. I think they built it as a church, and then it never got to be a church because the revolution happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it is a secular temple.
Okay.
To great French minds.
Okay. Cool.
Now the idea of vaunting intellectuals and writers and scientists in a mausoleum is the most beautiful human endeavor I can think of.
Mm.
And I love that about Paris.
Mm.
The fact that you can walk down Avenue Montaigne. Montaigne Avenue is the fashion. It's, and I know you're not a fashion guy, and I'm not, but I go weak at the knees at glamour.
Yeah.
And the glamour on that street, and it's named after the world's greatest essayist. And you've got streets named, you've got metro stations named after authors. They're just very proud of their culture.
Yes.
Whereas Australians are probably more proud of their sports people. So if we could just, that's one element of why I love Europe.
Yeah.
And okay. Why I'm here.
Okay. Mm. Fascinating conversation. I feel like we could keep going for ages.
No.
There's loads of things we could talk about. I must ask you, I'm sorry, but I must ask you that about Benedict Cumberbatch and Matt Smith. Now, you, as a journalist, you still work for the newspaper back in Australia, and they send you to London sometimes to interview certain people. And they sent you to talk to the cast of Sherlock and Doctor Who. So this is amazing. You've actually spoken to Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman.
Yep.
Can you tell us anything?
It's so a set visit. You turn up and I spoke to the creators first, Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss, and they're in Sherlock's room.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, they said take photos, and I stood in front of the Baker Street door. And
you were in Sherlock's room?
Yeah.
In Baker Street?
Mm.
Wow, what's it like in there?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Really?
I mean, it's utterly realistic.
Yeah.
It feels like you could live in it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And and when we're there, you know, there's a wall not there.
Yeah, they've removed one of the walls to help the filming.
But it's the furniture, it just looks very lived in.
Yeah.
So I interviewed Benedict Cumberbatch, who said he's very sharp, and he volunteered. I didn't expect him to volunteer. He said, I asked about his sartorial choices.
His clothing choices. Mm.
And how he's found himself a fashion icon.
Yeah.
And it's not him. So I asked him, you know, do you... What's it like to, like, just leave... Not just necessarily for the paparazzi walking out the door, but it's like, do I look the part now? Because people expect you to look the part. Anyway, he volunteered that he... He says, I know I have a face that looks like a plate of sick.
He has a face that looks like a plate of sick?
Yeah.
A plate of vomit?
Yeah.
He doesn't think he's attractive?
He thinks he's hideous.
Really?
Mm.
Wow.
And he goes, but he's like, you can't hurt me. You can't, because I live with this face.
But he's a sex symbol now.
Yeah, yeah, totally. But I'm not sure if he's come to terms with that or...
Maybe that's part of his charm. But, you know... People love him because he isn't conventional, and yet he still has great charisma and charm. And yet he kind of inside, you get the sense that he doesn't really think he's that attractive. Some Hollywood guys, they know that they're attractive and they wear it on their face. You can see it in their expression.
Mm.
They seem a bit arrogant or smug or something.
Yeah.
Benedict Cumberbatch doesn't seem to be an arrogant guy.
No, and it's sometimes I wonder whether, and not from him, but the, but Martin Freeman as well. Now, when Sherlock season one launched, Benedict Cumberbatch was not a household name.
Yeah.
So Sherlock blew him into the stratosphere.
Yeah, he's now massive.
Mm.
Yeah.
So to have come back for season three, so I was interviewing him on the set of season three.
Yeah.
And, he didn't seem to, I mean, it's the BBC, there's not a lot of money, but at the moment, he'd just done Star Trek, and he mentioned George Clooney. Now, Benedict Cumberbatch played an Australian.
Yeah.
He played Julian Assange in The Fifth Estate. I haven't seen it. I don't want to see it.
Mm.
But he mentioned that he was asking George Clooney advice on... How about movies about politics?
Okay.
And he wouldn't share his advice, but it just seems interesting seeing a guy who, I mean, it's so predictable. This is why a lot of celebrities don't like being talked about. Now, he's talking and he doesn't think he's very interesting. So Sherlock Holmes plays the violin. He mentioned that the worst thing about playing Sherlock Holmes is faking playing the violin because it's embarrassing to him. He has violinist friends.
Yes. So, you mean he found it challenging trying to convincingly play the violin?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, you see, when you see it from the actor's point of view, you realise that they worry about lots of little details that, as the audience, we don't have any idea about. Like, we don't realise that he has to worry about how to hold a violin. because he's never done it before.
Oh, and getting coached for how to play the few notes that they ask him to play in a way that makes him look like a virtuoso.
Yeah. But okay, but your general impression of Benedict Cumberbatch was that he was kind of modest and
utterly modest. Very, I mean, but isn't that English?
Not completely.
Not necessarily.
Some English people, I think, are quite arrogant.
Sure. But, and then Martin Freeman is just a guy. Like, they can't believe it. I don't think Martin Freeman, here's what Martin Freeman said. He said that on the set of The Hobbit, he mentioned that he'd been out a few nights ago and he enjoyed... Do you know this anecdote?
I should just say that Martin Freeman, as well as being in Sherlock Holmes, as well as being Dr. Watson, he's also Bilbo Baggins in The Hobbit. Yeah.
Which blew up after Sherlock as well.
Yeah.
So he's... On Sherlock, it's all very low-key. But on The Hobbit, he mentioned in passing these DJs that he liked. He saw it just in passing.
Yeah.
And then the next day, he has lunch in a tent and he's by himself. And Peter Jackson's brought out the DJs.
Yeah.
To New Zealand.
Wow.
To play for him.
Wow.
And to me, from what I can tell, Martin Freeman's not really that far removed from Tim in The Office.
Yeah.
So
you mean it must have been a shock for Martin Freeman to have these DJs that he liked brought all the way to New Zealand just for him.
Yeah.
So he's thinking, oh my God, it's probably difficult to deal with that from an ego point of
view. Yeah, exactly.
You think, wow, I must be really important, but I guess it must be a struggle to deal with that level of fame and that level of, say, influence where things change. People are willing to travel thousands of miles to do something for you. Yeah, it must play with your mind quite a lot. Yeah.
And I asked on the set of Doctor Who, this is the weird thing about being a journalist who doesn't care about celebrity.
Mm.
An entertainment journalist who doesn't... I don't care who's sleeping with who.
Yeah.
So, but when I'm in a room with English journos, a lot of them take up precious questions about romance and shit that I can't even believe that grown adults find it interesting.
Yeah.
But there is stuff of what they do that is interesting, very interesting.
Yeah.
But yet they don't seem to agree with what I think is interesting.
So a lot of these journalists, it's like they're still at school. They're like, who kissed who? Yeah. Who did what with who? Mm. You know, okay.
So the weird thing for Doctor Who is I asked what the creators thought made Doctor Who quintessentially British.
Mm.
And it was weird because I knew that they had an answer.
Yeah.
But they withheld it.
Really?
Because, and I asked a person who was working on the day, why was he so coy?
Why was he, like, avoiding the question?
Yeah, why was he cagey about answering my question? And they said, because you've got a room full of English hacks who will tear him apart if he talks about Britishness.
So he has to keep it understated.
Mm.
Because if he makes an overt, obvious statement about what it is that makes Doctor Who British, then all of the British journalists are not going to agree with him. Because everyone sort of has their own version of what genuine Britishness is.
Yeah.
So it's probably easier for the creators of something like Doctor Who to just leave it open.
Yeah.
And let everyone take their own reading of it.
But I feel like if he was talking to me by myself, he would have been much more forthcoming.
Ah, okay. What do you think makes Doctor Who quintessentially English or British?
I'm not qualified to say.
Yeah, yeah.
You are, undoubtedly.
It's a really hard question to ask. But what is Doctor Who, really? I mean, what is the interesting thing about him? It's the fact that he is sort of removed. He's ironic. Right? He makes jokes in the face of danger. He's kind of commenting on everything that's happening around him. He's not really there. He's different to everyone else and he's making ironic jokes about everything. I think maybe that's a bit English.
Yep.
That we're sort of slightly removed and we're quite self-conscious.
Mm.
And so that means that we have an ironic viewpoint on things.
But one of the weird things about being, say, a journalist in that capacity, is going to see television get made, and knowing that it's more fun to make television than to write about the people making television.
Okay.
So, but like Matt Smith, for some reason, everyone I spoke to were like Doctor Who fans when they were kids.
Yeah.
Like they are so proud. Like he nearly kind of, he got quite emotional. Well, he was saying that one day he just hopes that for a generation of kids, he's their Doctor Who.
Yeah. I think that maybe is part of the power of it as well, that it's built up over time and it's become like an institution that Doctor... Yeah, we all watched Doctor Who when we were kids. Even my parents watched Doctor Who when they were kids. And so it's, we've all gone through generations of experiencing the same thing, the drama, the mystery of who this guy is, the frightening things that happen in the show, the capacity to dream about it. And so as it's been reinforced over time, it's just become, an institution. But
so to see someone talk passionately about their work and then get asked questions about who are you shagging?
Yeah. Must be disappointed.
Yeah, it's, I was disappointed. But that's another reason why I like the British press as well, because you've got the very best and the very worst.
Yeah.
Like, it's a huge gamut there.
Yeah.
Ton of magazines, ton of newspapers, and if that's your thing, you can get it. If it's not your thing, you're catered for as well.
Oh, yeah, we've got sort of wildly varying types of press in the UK. We've got the newspapers, we've got the tabloid media, like The Sun and the News of the World that doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got, the broadsheet newspapers, which have different political viewpoints, but they generally have quite good reputations. The Guardian, The Independent, The Times, The Telegraph. Okay, but just to close things off, I know you're not into the celebrity thing, but I'm quite curious to see what people are really like, you know. So you told us about Benedict Cumberbatch. I heard that Martin Freeman is very witty. Was he funny for you? Was he being funny or was he not?
No, he was very funny. He's very dry. I mean, when I was talking to him, there was people on the stage crashing stuff. Like they were just dropping things. They were making a lot of noise.
Okay.
And he was just, I think he was like muttering. he could have. He didn't throw his weight around. He was annoyed that they were making all this noise.
So instead of like shouting at the people, he was like muttering under his
breath. Yeah, it's like, oh, if you could drop that a few more times, that'd be great.
Right,
like,
sort of sarcastic.
Yeah, very sarcastic.
Thing. Yeah, that's funny. That's good. I'm glad that he did it like that and that he didn't shout and lose his temper.
No.
That's good. All right, Matt Smith?
I spoke to him with David Tennant. They were together.
You had Matt Smith and David Tennant, both of the Doctors.
They were both in their garb, dressed as the Doctors.
You spoke to Matt Smith and David Tennant, both of them, they were dressed as the Doctor. You spoke to two Doctor Who's at the same time?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
They just clearly absolutely loved each other's company.
Really?
Like, that's amazing. Like, to see, they were really...
having fun.
They were having so much fun. And it was weird because David Tennant was saying how he was nervous about coming back.
Yeah.
And that it's not his gig anymore. And he actually, one interesting thing he said was that to be the Doctor, he was rehearsing and he couldn't get it right. And anyway, he just went back and watched DVDs of himself.
So he learned how to be the Doctor by studying.
By watching himself.
Wow, yeah. Brilliant. Thank you so much for telling us all about these things, all about the people you've met, the work you've done, the country that you come from.
No, it's my fundamental pleasure, and I'm sorry if I've rabbited on and the twang of my accent has been...
No, it's been great.
Okay.
It's been great. I'm sure everyone has appreciated being able to listen to such an interesting conversation. I mean, I say that. I hope that doesn't sound arrogant. I mean, I was part of the conversation. I personally think it was interesting.
Okay.
So I hope that my listeners do too. Do you have anything, a final word to say to the people of
the world? Oh my God, that sounds really ominous.
Yeah, you have to say a statement to the people of planet Earth, because everybody is listening to this.
It's like another Jerry Springer.
You don't have to take it seriously.
No, I just hope everyone, throws another shrimp on the barbie. That's all, you know. If you throw another shrimp on, life's good, yeah?
Yeah, an imaginary shrimp.
Yeah.
On
a hypothetical barbie.
On a hypothetical barbie that doesn't have to be in Australia. It could be anywhere.
No, precisely. Yeah.
So just enjoy your...
You know what? If you're not from Australia, can you please just take that cliche and make it yours?
Yeah.
Like if you're Lithuanian... Make that Lithuanian.
Yeah.
Mm.
So in Lithuania, you need to start having more barbecues. You need to start eating more prawns on those barbecues and then start throwing that expression around.
Yeah.
So that eventually, let's say in 10 years, everyone will be going, oh, you're from Lithuania. Throw another shrimp on the barbie.
Fair dinkum.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Brilliant. Thanks very much, Daniel.
Cheers, mate.
Great to speak to you. So there you are, that was Daniel Burt. I really enjoyed speaking to Daniel. I think he's really good conversation. You know, I feel like we could have kept going and going for ages. We had loads of things to talk about. I feel like he's quite willing to talk in quite a lot of depth about subjects, you know? So I think he was a good guest. Now, I wonder if you could understand everything he said. I expect that some of you will have had some problems, you know, because he speaks really fast and he speaks in an accent that you might not be familiar with. But still, I think it's very good for you to just listen to these things, to expose yourself to you know, English in this natural way, even when you don't understand everything. It's just good to kind of hear it, and the more you hear it, you start to kind of get familiar with like different accents or different sounds in English. If there are any particular things that you really can't work out, things that are troubling you that you don't understand, at the moment there's no transcript for this episode, perhaps in the future, but in the meantime what you can do is just leave a comment for this episode, which includes some kind of time code and maybe a question. You know, it could just be, what did Daniel say at this point? And then leave a specific time code, and then I'll be able to find that point and then, you know, play it to myself and then identify the word or phrase or whatever that you couldn't pick out. All right, do that, and that might help you to, you know, identify things. And then hopefully in the future we'll have a transcript for this episode. That's it for this one, though, and I look forward to presenting you with more conversations in the future. But for now, it's bye, 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 bye. Thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, you can visit teacherluke.wordpress.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.